Welcome, everyone, to Wollongong's Local Planning and Assessment Panel. We have the people in front of you whose names you can read who are the panel for tonight. My name is Sue Francis. I'm the chair tonight. We have all signed a form that says we don't have any conflicts of interest in relation to the items on the agenda, but I'd like to put one on the record because we are recording this meeting. So, Peter, would you like to declare whether you have a conflict or not? And your name.
My name's Peter Salos. I have no conflict of interest that I know of.
My name's Steve Hermio. I have no conflict of interest.
My name's Larissa Ozog. I have no known conflict of interest.
Sue Francis, no conflict. Thank you. So just a reminder, again, we are recording, so we must mind our P's and Q's. That's everyone. Otherwise, it goes on the record. But it's also there as a record of what happens today. We've got three items on the agenda, and I'll take them in order. I have people on my list to speak for the items 2 and 3, and I'll call them as and when we get to that item in the order that I've got them. What I would like then is for those individuals to come and sit at this table here, simply because that's where there's a microphone and everyone can then hear what's said and it can also be recorded. 3 minutes, 5 minutes to speak. Was it 3 or 5? 5 minutes. Then the panel may or may not have any questions. Usually we have the objectors come first and then we have the applicant if there are any and if the applicant is here. So what I will do is I will move to the first item, which is the Bulleye Tourist Park at Fell Road in Bulleye. Now, I have no one on my list, but I'm going to ask if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to speak on this item. If that's a no, I will go to the second item on the list, which is 124 Avondale Road, Avondale. Now, I do have two people on my list, Dennis Cooley. Would you like to come forward? Now, this application is for the demolition of existing dwelling house and associated structures and construction of a boarding house containing 15 rooms and one manager's room. The floor is yours.
The question is, why did this DA be put in after it was rejected by the Wollongong Planning Panel at the last meeting that we had?
Shall I answer that?
Yes.
Because there is a provision in the legislation that allows any refused application to seek a review, and that review has to be considered by an alternate panel or person. That's why it's here.
Yeah, thank you. The one issue that I have with it, and I don't want to bring up all the other issues that I did last time.
Well, you should do.
Okay. Well, I'll start with a few of them then that I can remember. They tell us that there is only a 3-month tenure there for the residents. I've asked the question before, who's going to police that? The parking that's there, they don't have enough parking there. I believe they only have 6 parking spaces. Where are the rest of the vehicles that are going to be there, considering that they've got 15 rooms there? The other thing that I'm questioning is the traffic survey that they did on Avondale Road. I don't think it was a very good survey because they did it from Huntley Road to the Princess Highway. They did not take into account Ena Avenue or Turnbull Crescent. Ena Avenue and Turnbull Crescent in the early hours of the morning through to about 9 a.m, maybe a bit later, is very, very busy with traffic coming out of Ena Avenue going right and left. Turnbull Crescent, traffic is always coming down there, going right and going up Avondale Road to the Princess Highway. We do get a bit of traffic in the morning coming down there, going left into Turnbull Crescent. Avondale Road proceeds through to Huntley Road, where they said they've done the survey, and that is very, very busy, and it will get busier with the construction of the golf course that's happening out around Huntley. Those are my questions. And what is council doing about it with this DA? Because I don't think it is good enough. the people that they say they're putting in there are going to be people who are going to be working for BlueScope Steel. BlueScope Steel will not put people up in a boarding house. They will have them somewhere close to where they're doing their project, not out at Avondale. The other thing is, there is only bus service that goes in one direction down there, and you've got to go down, around, out to Mount Brown, goodness knows where else, before you actually turn to come back in to Dapto or come back towards Wollongong. So it's the survey is not correct. There are quite a few other issues there. The noise issue had, I don't think, been addressed correctly. Also, guest parking. There's not enough parking in the street as it is now, especially after business hours when we do have a lot of people who live in the street park their vehicles out there. So that's another issue that we're up against, as well as the visitors. That's about it for the moment.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Yes. Can I just ask you the bus service?
Yes.
What, where does that bus go and how late
does it go? Okay, they have two services. I think one's 33 and I can't remember what the other one was. But they go south and then do a big loop and come back into Dapto and then into Wollongong. And it's the only direction that they go. They do not go north up or northwest up Avondale Road to the Princess Highway. So that's why I question the public transport that they've put down in their DA.
Yeah. And how often is the bus quite regular?
Okay. In the morning, it's about every half hour, and during the day, it's about an hour. Thank you.
I have one other speaker, Robert St. John. Please come forward.
Good afternoon. From what I can read from the original DA, not much has changed. The only thing they've done is move the buildings around. It's not going to change what this development is going to do in our eyes and what it's going to do to our area, especially turning it into a boarding house. It's going to create, as Dennis said, more a parking problem for the visitors that go there. And you can't tell me that all these people, there's 16 or 15 bike spaces, they're all going to go ride around on a push bike all day. That's not on. The major issue for us I'm from 118 Avondale Road, is the easement that they want to put through our property. The water that's going to go into the back of our property will create a bigger hazard than what's already there now. It's already there's only has to be a smaller amount of rain. The water does not run away, and it will eventually cause problems down in Una Avenue as well. If the water backs up there, Una Avenue will flood. And I don't care who did their studies, it's wrong. It's got to be wrong. The other thing that I read into their application was that they said that the easement, Wollongong City Council should provide this easement to the builders. So that what happens then to the compensation to the residents in our development where it runs through their properties. They're going to have to, their places will be devalued by having an easement going through it. It's not going to make it in the property anymore, and the whole development will affect it, the whole area economically. The value of our houses, the people who have worked hard in there to have, those values will go down because of this property and what they're going to do there. I just don't believe that they're going to have workers in there. I think after 3 months, and like Dennis said, who's going to police this? We have enough trouble across the road now with the Department of Housing, New South Wales, whoever. 97 Avondale Road. The police are there, you could say, nearly every, at least once a week. And in the last couple of weeks, there was a stabbing across the road there as well. We don't need any more, and they're not saying who these people are that are going to go in there, into these places. They're not all going to be steel workers. Steel workers will have enough money. They won't stay in a boarding house there. It just stinks, the whole thing. And it's going to affect us economically, environmentally, and socially as well for the whole area. I think that's about all I've got to say. It's just that it's been rejected before, and there's nothing changed in this. All they've done is moved a building around, put one building at the front and put a little building at the back. Nothing's changed. It's exactly the same thing they're doing there.
Thank you very much. Anyone have any questions? I just want to clarify one point. There is no restriction on who can go in a boarding house. It's just the length of time they have to be there.
Yeah, but that's what Dennis said. Who's going to police this?
No. Just there is no control. So if someone
they can stay there for as long as they like.
No. They can stay there for 3 months and longer. There is no limit beyond that.
Okay.
I'm only talking generally, well, just for your information, not in any other way. There is a manager there. This is common across all boarding houses everywhere in the state. But you are right in as much as they may say we're going to have employees from Blue Scope, but there is no requirement for them only to be Blue Scope employees or any other type of person.
Right, okay.
So anyone can seek to occupy a boarding
room.
So
people from...
Anyone in this room? Anyone.
People from NDIS?
Anyone.
And I can see now what's going to happen because it's going to be an NDIS government-sponsored thing, and that's why they're pushing to get it through, because it's going to be a big money spinner.
Oh, well, there are boarding houses. Just for clarity, there are boarding houses everywhere throughout metropolitan Sydney.
Yeah. Well, they are.
Just for clarity.
Yeah, but in the middle, right in the middle of a...
Everywhere.
Yeah, well...
You can quickly. Okay. So long as it's not a repeat of what we've already heard. No, and your name first, please.
Just about the water, number one.
Your name first, please, and your
address. Reinhard Worth. I live in Ina Avenue, the fourth house down.
And what was your name again, sorry?
Reinhard
Worth,
Warth.
Thank you.
Now... The water problem. We've had water problems for the last 40 years since I've lived there. I moved in there in 1972. Now, to make it easier for the council, they were going to put pipes in and spoon drains. I'm on the border with the farm behind me, in which nothing has happened. And so what the council did, or the general... property bloke made it a flat plain from the railway line all the way down. Now, doesn't that already tell you that we've got a water problem? And where's the water going to go from these units that they're going to build there? That's number one. And number two is about the housing commission at 97. I live in Eden Avenue. The things that go on there, police are called there nearly every second day. We've just had a murder there 2 weeks ago. Got stabbed and he died. It's been kept quiet from the media. Why? I don't know. And if they mix with the other ones on 124, just imagine what's going to happen.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'll start again. Both the previous speaker and you have expressed concerns about the water and how that's going to be managed. What happens to the water when it gets past your property is something that I don't think anyone except the council can control. But with the water that goes through your properties, the overland flow and however the water is drained through your properties, that's a question that is really a question of law, and it'll be resolved by a legal process in one of the courts. Now, it's just the process that goes through. I've got no control of it. I'm just explaining.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And let me finish. Most of the processes, there is compensation paid to the person whose property it goes through, in terms of the access, the repair of any damage that's done, and there's also some compensation because of the inconvenience that you suffer, both financially and in terms of the use of the land while this work goes on. That's something that none of us can decide. It's decided by the court, but it's a process that's got to be gone through before that happens.
We have been through the processes, not once, but 10 times.
Can I just say that was for information, not for debate?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
No, but I'm just saying, we've had all of them in there. They promise and promise and say.
This is not a question for
thank you very much. Thank you. I'll deal with it. Peter.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, it's not. The drainage issue is not something we can deal with outside of this application, unfortunately. Now, do I have anyone else here to speak on this matter? If not, I'll move on to the next item. Okay, so the applicant is not here. Thank you. The next item is 28 George Street. Now, 28 George Street, if I can find my piece of paper. It's for the erection of a multi-housing comprising four dwellings. Now, I do have a list of people who wish to speak on this item, but just for clarity, because I have a long list of people on this, and I'm not quite sure that we're clear on who's speaking. Is Annette Jones speaking? Would you like to come forward? I have a long list, but I don't know whether everyone wants to speak or whether Annette Jones is speaking on behalf of...
I'm speaking on behalf of...
Roxburgh?
Residents.
Oh, good. I really don't mind who speaks first. I've just got a long list, but also some cryptic notes as to who wants to speak. If you want to speak, that's fine, so long as you don't say the same thing.
Okay, I'm Murray Jones. I'm the secretary of the Thrill Village Committee. We're a community group that has been active for 28 years, attending mainly to gardens and graffiti.
Is the mic on? It's hard to hear.
Press the button.
Put the lights on?
And can you hear me? Talk into it.
Okay. I'll focus on aspects of the DA relative to its location. Can you hear me there now? Then each speaker in turn will address concerns, and then the final speaker will summarise the situation. Let me start with the surrounding streetscape. Now, to the east of this, of 28 George Street, there are five homes that can be described as classic 1950s freestanding bungalows. They're all weatherboard and by appearance are very well maintained. Similarly to the three houses to the west, and across the road there are 10 houses, similar again, some a bit older, dating back to the 1920s. All are well maintained, many with exceptional gardens. This is largely due to the permanent water supply that seeps down through the escarpment to feed Hewitt's Creek. The alignment of the creek and its impact on these properties can be seen on a map as shown at figure 4 on page 10 of tonight's WLPP report. On that report. The creek is known for its violent short-term floods and makes a wide erosion cut through each of these 10 properties. Now, it's fair to say that because of these multi-dwelling developments on any of these 10 properties will be relatively expensive. Thus, these well-maintained homes will probably be there for a long time. So right in the middle of a matching collection of 18 or so classic homes, of which half will probably never be suitable for townhouse construction, one dwelling, being a timber structure that could function as a home for another 100 years, has been purchased for multi-unit redevelopment. Okay, let's consider some of the Wollongong Development Control Plan's objectives that apply to this site. The very first objective of the Development Control Plan is to encourage buildings which integrate within the streetscape and the natural settings whilst maintaining the visual amenity of the area. The third point is to ensure building designs contribute into the locality through a design that considers built scale, form, articulation and landscaping. Also on page 10 of the Development Control Plan, there is a separate wording specific to Thurule that says, any new housing must be sympathetic with the existing Thurule Village built form and streetscape, particularly in older areas where the weatherboard housed pitched roofs and wide eaves. So I think it can take more than a similar pitched roof to cause this integration. Can a design so different to all of its surrounding dwellings integrate within the streetscape, be sympathetic to its neighbours, and maintain a visual amenity of the area now and in the future, when over half of the surrounding homes will probably be for the foreseeable future, classic standalone bungalows? How can the visual amenity of the neighbours not be degraded by this long barracks of a building? Now, I'm also puzzled as to why the developer did not engage with the neighbours, as suggested by the Wollongong Local Planning Panel in the last iteration of this development. If they would have, they could have found a unique opportunity for 28 George Street. The existing building appears to be built as far forward as possible on the 1,000 square metres of land that it occupies. This building could be renovated, and the backyard of around about 600 square metres could be infilled by several units. I'm sure the developer would earn similar margins. This would deliver a far better environmental outcome of a design that could blend within and not degrade this neighbourhood. I need to ask, how can you allow this building to proceed given what appears to me to be these contradictions within the Development Control Plan? Thank you.
Any questions, anyone? No, thank you. So who do I have next? Do I have Annette Jones next? Please.
My name's Annette Jones and I'm part of the Thurule Village Committee with Mari. I'm reading a presentation on behalf of the residents who live next door to this development at 28 George Street. They live in number 26, so to the eastern side. Unfortunately, they can't be here tonight, so I'm speaking on their behalf. So, good evening to you all, and thank you very much for your time this evening. 28 George Street is a contentious development. Our community expectations of this site are clearly not reflected in the developers' proposed plans. The number of objections to this new development has increased this time, totaling 47. From memory, I think it was about 31 last time. It is obvious that residents clearly oppose this development in its current form. This could have been avoided if the community, in particular the neighbours in George Street, had been consulted, which is something Murray referred to. As direct neighbours on the eastern side at number 26 George Street, we continue to hold serious concerns for our privacy and the quality of life if this development is approved. The developer would argue that by removing driveways and placing a car park underneath, they were reducing the overall footprint of the site. However, it should be noted that this revised plan has actually increased the number of bedrooms from 10 to 12. And it's also going to be an underground car park. Added to the extra bedrooms in the new development, outdoor living spaces have been placed on both the eastern and western sides of the property. The outdoor living spaces that adjoin our property on the eastern side are much closer to the boundary fence than the previous design. As owners of number 26 George Street, our bedroom windows will now be even closer than before to the proposed dwelling. We take little reassurance from the blanket statements in the document, like noise is not expected to be generated above the normal domestic levels. When such a large number of people could possibly be living next door, sitting, entertaining and talking in outdoor spaces so close to our bedroom windows and private outdoor spaces, we find this lack of privacy, peace and quite unacceptable. In keeping with other houses in nearby proximity that have only gardens in the front of their property, we would suggest a garden without hard structures would be far better option for the side of the property of 28 George Street. The height of the buildings is also a threat to our privacy. Whilst bedrooms have been placed upstairs in the proposed development on 28 George Street, the very nature of a large two-storey development as opposed to a small-scale single-storey development will always overlook and overshadow our property. A basement car park has been added to the design. We believe this is merely to maximise the number of units the developer can place on the site. There are natural water flows, springs, that we are aware of in close proximity to the development. Geotech reports have not been provided. In the absence of geotech reports, we hold serious concerns for groundwater and the stability of the soil and rock strata in the local area. Without this vital information, it would seem that excavating such a substantial area that can supposedly house 8 cars underground would potentially be a risky exercise. As our property adjoins 28, we are concerned that structures and the vegetation on our property will be adversely affected by such large-scale development. Furthermore, this underground car park for residents in this development doesn't appear adequate. Large vehicles will be unable to turn and park in this undercover area. In particular, those at unit 4 right up the back. It is questionable whether 2 large cars could be parked in the allocated spaces, particularly, I suppose, you've got an SUV. The very limited turning circle there were very limited turning circle documents provided with the DA, and they failed to provide reassurance that all vehicles will be able to enter or leave the car park in a forward-facing direction, which is important. As a result of the difficulty involved in parking underneath and the fact that many people use garages for storage purposes, it's highly possible the residents will park out on the street instead, adding further congestion to the already crowded street, which you might have noticed today when you were there. In conclusion, in its current form, the development at 28 George Street is too large. It has been planned without careful consideration of the impact on neighbours or the environment. If this proposed development went ahead, it would set a precedent in an area that predominantly has single-storey dwellings. The negative side effects on residents, both new and existing, are of a concerning nature and cannot be ignored.
Thank you very much. Any questions, anyone? No, thank you. Thank you very much. There are other people in the audience. Does anyone else wish to speak, or has Annette said it all for you? You do want to speak? Oh, right. Okay. Right. Oh, okay. So that was Murray, and that's Annette. Patricia Donaldson.
I'm also a resident at 26 George Street, so I may actually repeat some of the things that Annette has said on behalf of our neighbours. People have told me not to be emotional in presenting to the panel, but it is really hard not to be when I consider the impact of this development on our lives if it's approved in its current form. This version of the development is higher, it's closer to us, it has more bedrooms, and it's a mere 7 square metres less in floor space than the proposal that was rejected previously. Excuse me. We'll suffer the loss of our views of the escarpment, the loss of privacy in our outdoor space, and a significant loss of solar access, especially during winter, when our house already receives restricted sun due to the topography and the trees on neighbouring properties. we'll be subjected to significantly increased noise as one dwelling is replaced by four. We find the comments in the proposal about the courtyards and terraces that will be overlooking our property very confusing. There's little detail about these structures, but it appears that our privacy may depend on the trees on our land remaining as they are. This really isn't satisfactory. The developer's own arborist report indicated that a couple of the trees on our fence line are at the end of their lives. And I'd like to be clear about what happens with these amended plans that have been requested. Are they simply approved by council planners? And I'd like to ask why this issue hasn't been resolved prior to this. I've stood in the backyard of 28 George Street and I've seen the fine view that they will have of our private space and our neighbours' private outdoor space. And in fact, people on the second floor will be able to see into the number 24 George Street, not so private space. Last weekend, I walked down my street, and of the 58 properties with a street frontage on George Street, 41 are single-storey houses, and the majority of these are weatherboards. There are only five two-storey brick or rendered houses in the street. Many houses have been renovated and a few blocks battle-axed, but all the while maintaining the integrity of the streetscape, eschewing the grey and black palette of new developments. This development won't do that. It'll be higher, larger, and more intrusive than anything within 100 metres in any direction. Much has been made of the precedent established by the development at 36 George Street. One ugly development should not be seen as a standard to be followed. Those of us who live in the street recall the noise, the vehicles clogging the street, and the water constantly being pumped from that excavation. It's rumoured that the development incurred a number of fines for breaches of regulations, but these were considered simply the cost of doing business. So what sort of nightmare can we expect to live with if the massive excavation required for this proposal is approved? Apart from the noise and vibrations generated over 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, what protection will we have from the flouting of the conditions? And what compensation will we have for damage to our properties? Anybody I've spoken to about this proposal has been concerned about the size and character. Is it right that developers with deep pockets destroy perfectly good homes and replace them with homes which offer fewer amenities for families? At what stage do the interests of a developer become more important than the interests of the community? I had thought naively, perhaps, that the grounds given by the Wollongong Local Planning Panel previously in refusing the earlier proposal for this site might have been taken seriously by both the developers and by council planners, but I fail to see where this proposal demonstrates any consistency with Wollongong DCP, whether it demonstrates suitability for the site, is in the public interest, or that there will not be adverse impacts on surrounding properties. Thank you.
Thank you. No, we don't clap. We listen, we don't clap. Nigel Puckeridge. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Nigel Puckeridge. I am a resident that lives directly across the road from the proposed development with my family. At the last Wollongong Planning Panel meeting, I discussed my concerns regarding the isolated impacts this development raised with regard to traffic and pedestrian safety, in particular with Kelton Lane. I am not satisfied that the changes that have been made to the DA will reduce any risk of danger to the public or local neighbours. Kelton Lane is a shared access zone that has only enough room for one car at multiple points. It is a well-used laneway with increasing amounts of traffic passing through it daily, especially at peak times such as before and after school. Along with the traffic, it is shared by pedestrians, many being school children, mothers pushing prams, elderly and the general neighbourhood. It is also a common place for children to play in. I would also add that it is the only access point when Lawrence Hargrave Drive could be blocked off. You cannot continue north or south either way. The junction, which often has conflict due to a confusion of right-of-way, is essentially going from being a three-way travelsome spot to a four-way intersection with potential for a serious incident. In the new submission, it is mentioned that all cars will leave from the car park in a forward direction. The plans are vague on the details of this. Given the last car spot at the northern end has little to no room to reverse out of their allocated space and then to proceed in a forward direction. This should be assessed by the panel to confirm there is adequate space for a car to negotiate the area. In addition, reversing down from the top area of the car park, it drops at an 18-degree slope. Halfway down the car park, it would be difficult for the cars in the car park entering and exiting to view each other. The prior development plan had parking available for 11 cars on site at any one time. This was for 5 two-bedroom apartments. The new DA allows 9 cars for 4 three-bedroom apartments. So the potential resident car count has risen and the car parking space has reduced. Where will all these additional cars park? The only other space available is on the street, which places further pressure on this troublesome spot. The council's traffic officer is satisfied that the proposed development is unlikely to have any discernible impact on the local road network. I and many in the neighbourhood can quite strongly argue that this is a major oversight and should be assessed further at this location. As you may hear repeated a few times today, we are also concerned about the accumulative effect on the traffic network and Thirroul neighbourhood as council approves many more of these developments over time. Roads and Maritime Services are currently investigating initiatives to improve the traffic through Thirroul and Bulleye, which acknowledges there is a problem to be fixed. Their community consultation map reveals an overwhelming amount of comments from local residents. What this shows me is there is a need for change in the area that has been acknowledged by the RMS, which is compounded by overdevelopment of the area. The developers have used the precedent of number 36 up the road in a number of areas, but perhaps the negative issues of the car park should be assessed. When this car park was dug out, the excavators hit a natural spring that flooded the area for weeks. The unfiltered water was then pumped onto the street, while another DA needed to be submitted to approve new conditions for this issue. This development, to my knowledge, now has an emergency pump that removes water into a stormwater drain purpose-built and is vulnerable to flooding. It is quite feasible for a similar scenario to occur at 28 George Street, and we believe a hydrologist report is essential before any diggings begin. It is my view that the panel rejects this development proposal, considering all the issues that are raised here this evening. Thanks for your time.
Christy Longworth? No? Okay, thank you. Nick Gartrell? Thank you. Come on down. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Good evening. Good evening, Madam Chairman, panel members. Despite our dismay that we are all here again arguing against an inappropriate development proposal, we thank you for the rigour of the past assessments and the ongoing opportunity to provide our input to the process. We first came to the planning panel seeking to prevent an inappropriate development setting a potentially disastrous precedent. We now see this fear being realised with the design for number 28 George Street seeking justification through mimicking elements of number 36 George Street, a building that seems to have had a unique set of rules applied and whose approval still raises questions and concerns in the minds of many people. What the community understands about it certainly reflects poorly upon the private certifier involved, but also erodes trust in development approval processes. My principal focus for tonight is overdevelopment. As in many areas of industry and commerce, the housing sector is showing signs of market failure. Extreme cases are Opal and Mascot Towers. The growing cumulative impacts are costing society greatly, as the negative externalities of development are borne by the environment and general population. The various proposals submitted thus far for number 28 George Street would add to this growing cumulative impact. On the issue of encroachment, Unit 1's awning extends into the required 6-metre front setback, but is permitted under a clause that allows balconies, front courtyard fences and other building extrusions to be up to 900 millimetre closer. This awning is more substantial than what is described in the resources I consulted and seems more appropriately classified as a portico and therefore a building element rather than a building extrusion. building panel members will be better placed than I to assess the validity of this permitted setback intrusion. In any case, the proposal has some confusing figures for this encroachment. A setback of a minimum 5.5 metres at the ground floor level and 9.245 at the first floor level. The alfresco unit on Unit 1 is setback 3.95 metres. Unit 1 ground floor and first floor setback of 5.754 metres. There may be a simple explanation, but it's hard for us lay people to resolve. Of greater concern is what happens if plans are approved with conflicting figures. I note that the setback clause also states that an increase in setbacks may be required to retain existing trees, and Council notes that the proposed encroachment will significantly affect the street tree, a tree they note as worthy of protection. In contrast, the development proposal contains an opinion that the street tree is unlikely to be affected by the development proposal. I disagree with this opinion for two reasons, as it seems does Council. To accommodate the overdevelopment, the deep soil zone is proposed to be only 80% of the standard minimum for the site of this size, permitted because it spans the rear of the property. This would contribute to an overall infiltration reduction of probably 70% less than current, given the building footprint and replacement of lawns with shrubs. The excavation and drainage methods will further reduce groundwater availability for the street tree through engineered interception and diversion. The cumulative impact of reduced infiltration across the suburb is reduced soil moisture, which limits plant growth, exacerbating the urban heat island effect. Importantly, it also causes significant and quantifiable damage to Sydney Water's pipe systems in clay soils through subsidence, shrinking and more aggressive tree root incursions. We all pay for that damage through increased water rates. The proposed building covers too much of the site. Proposed excavation works would also have a 15% encroachment into the tree protection zone of the street tree, removing 15% of its roots and compounding the greatly reduced groundwater availability as we head into a predicted dry period in a drying climate. Cutting roots also exposes the tree to potential soil-borne pathogens carried on equipment and workers' boots. No protection measures in this regard have been mentioned. We welcome as a minimum the improvements suggested by Council's assessment officer for reductions in some levels. However, the suggestion of compensatory vegetative screens to achieve basic privacy needs may work given time, adequate maintenance and good plant choices, but this is in no way certain. A basic certificate, for comparison, deals with some equivalent issues and, as I understand it, notes the impermanence of vegetation and does not permit it to be counted in reducing solar gain. Privacy would be less of an issue on this site with an appropriately scaled development. And many hundreds of hours of work to improve the design outcomes of this inappropriate overdevelopment are not driven by potential private financial gain. What we value in our area is largely not monetarily quantifiable, and the current system is not well set up to protect that. We recognise that there are always trade-offs between public and private benefits. However, approval of this development in its current form would entrench an undesirable precedent for inappropriate development, and as evidenced by the numerous public objections received by Council, approval of this design cannot be claimed by Council to be in the public interest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
No. No. Jeremy Park. Hi, Jeremy Park from 63 George Street. So I've been asked to speak to the panel's previous reasons for declining the last EA and how we all consider the new plans have addressed those reasons. In regards to the previous DA, the panel said that the design of the proposed development is out of character with both the existing and desired character of the area. In particular, they noted the overdevelopment of the site, bulk from the streetscape, and that the landscaping and materials were not consistent with the area. We feel that the new DA, besides from the amendment which was made during the exhibition process of altering to a pitched roof, is worse in overall nature to the previous DA. The bulk and character issues have not been addressed or properly resolved. Recently, a DA for number 7 George Street, which was a subdivision and dual occupancy, had offered a similar modern look and was rejected by council staff for being out of character in the area and for parking issues. Staff referred to this saying future character referred to it by saying that it did not meet the future character statement for Thirroul in Chapter D1. And they noted and made note of the external finishes of face brick and selected materials were not in keeping with the existing building stock of mainly weatherboard houses. With the DA for 28 George Street, we can see from the street four ground-to-ceiling glass doors with aluminium frames, various metal balcony railings, slatted privacy shutters, large metal ventilation louvers from the basement, face brick, and a cladding material which is not specified. The cladding is referred to as selected cladding or similar. Without specifying materials properly, we don't know what the developer will choose. I also note that the trend is to paint houses black or dark grey, and it's not traditional or in character with the area, and nor practical for the environment we live in. The exposed basement level adds extra bulk from the previous design and presents itself to the streetscape as a significant development. The planning panel previously also noted that the traffic issue in the area was not specific to just this DA, however, a holistic view was required. As a matter of precedent, the area cannot continue to allow the cumulative effect of replacing single dwellings with four dwellings. Council recently noted on the rejection for 7 George Street, which was only for 2 townhouses, and they said that residential development will remain primarily low density in nature with some medium density within close vicinity to the Thirroul Village Centre and railway station envisaged. Development further up George Street, such as this, is not in keeping with the future plans for development and density of the area. George Street already has purpose-built low-income housing and existing developments for smaller family units. The area has diversity in housing stock. The panel previously noted a privacy issue for neighbours. This concern has not been fully resolved and was noted by council staff in this application. However, that will be talked to by other people tonight. The panel also previously noted that the amenity for the future inhabitants was poor due to the general overdevelopment on that site. They suggested reducing the number of units and overall bulk. The developer has reduced the number of units from 5 to 4. However, they added a third level for parking. They've also increased the number of bedrooms in each unit from 2 to 3. This is now a larger development in most respects, with 12 bedrooms from previous 10, which correlates to around 16 people, which on a single block in a low-density zone is too many. Less space per person on the same amount of land and more cars. We feel many other issues with amenity are not resolved, with little in the way of natural outdoor space. Solar access for future residents is poor, and the lack of adequate passive insulation will require heating in winter and cooling in summer. The panel previously noted the kitchen had no opening windows and that their positioning was inadequate for access. There is still a lack of detail as to which windows open, if any. However, now the kitchen is in an even worse position, squarely in the middle of the main living area and not near any windows. There is no extractor fan shown in the plans, and it would seem impossible to have one considering it's an island kitchen with the bedrooms above. This demonstrates to us again that the plans are not adequately resolved to make it a livable dwelling for the future inhabitants. The issue of bulk has only gotten worse. We have concerns for the internal voids. Sorry, is that a time up?
That is your time.
Oh, sorry. I'll quick up. Okay, yes. Well, we have concerns that the internal voids shown on the plans have not been counted in the floor surface ratios. And we have concerns at the parking level being overly visible from the street. And we have concerns of the height and natural ground levels being altered. I'll just try to skip through quickly. The only other thing, look, I'll just skip that. The only other thing that I wanted to mention is that the process has been difficult for the residents. The plans were amended halfway through the exhibition process, and this doubled the amount of time we had to spend on it. There was no annexed summary of the changes provided by council, so finding what had been changed through this process was very difficult. we could tell which files had been changed only by looking at the dates of which they were uploaded, and some files were uploaded at different times through the process. When we were aware this was going to the planning panel, all the files got moved to another part of the website and we couldn't access them easily. The community submissions against this development has risen this time around, which we feel reflects the lack of addressing the general overdevelopment of the site and the panel's previous concerns. Thank you.
Aaron Sutcliffe. Surely we can't have any other issues. Or you've been very clever at breaking up your issues.
Dear esteemed panel members, I would like to respectfully disagree with Wollongong Council's assessment that the proposed development complies with the number of stories that is allowed in regards to the R2 zoning of the property. Submit that the definition of a story as contained within the WDCP states that a story means a floor within a building, including a floor used for storage or parking. I also submit that the located within the Wollongong DCP, it clearly confirms that an R2 low-density residential zone permit allows for a maximum height of 9 metres and a maximum of 2 storeys. Wollongong Council have suggested that the proposed structure meets their requirements for the number of storeys and has made reference to the WCP. In the writer's opinion, the plans submitted clearly illustrate 3 clear levels when looking at the plans submitted, which clearly illustrate 3 levels on the southern, eastern and western elevations, and that the height of the garage finishes well above the proposed ground height and natural ground height. I also wish to refer to the National Construction Code, Volume 1, Building Code of Australia, Section C1.2, calculation of rise in stories. And in that section, it clearly states that the rise in stories is the sum of the greatest number of stories at any part of the external walls of the building in any stories within the roof space above the and also above the finished ground next to that part. To further clarify my position, I wish to refer to the New South Wales Supreme Court case that helps to legally define and sets a legal precedent as to what is considered a story within a building. The important case is the owner's strata plan versus Rockdale City Council and ANOR versus Allianz Australia Insurance in 2012. In this matter, the Supreme Court of New South Wales looked at whether the floor of the lower story provides direct egress to the road or open space. The court found that the internal configuration of the proposed building did not determine effective height, and that the distance between the topmost story of the building and the points of egress applied to the definition. Based on the facts, the lower ground level of the proposed building was the lower story providing direct egress to the road or open space. Because of the definition of story in the Building Code of Australia, in this matter, it provided space for parking in excess of 3 vehicles and it had direct egress to the street. Therefore, I submit that using the National Construction Code, which the proposed structure must comply with, in conjunction with the New South Wales Supreme Court decision of the above case, that the council should abide by, that the proposed development should be considered a 3-storey development as it clearly provides vehicle and pedestrian egress and ingress in and out of the property, and that the sum of the greater number of stories can be viewed on most of the external walls. It must also be considered that the location of this property is located in a residential precinct whereby people had bought into the area expecting that any further development around them would be measured in design. Contrary to the nearby commercial precinct located further down in George Street where greater property development is to be expected. I wish to reiterate that I'm not against further development in the area of Thurille, which is necessary for its progression. What I also believe is necessary to consider is the fact that the property of 28 George Street is unique because of its unenviable location across from Kelton Lane. This is because it is located in an area that is frequented by local school children making their way to school, buses and other pedestrians, many elderly making their way to the commercial precinct, parklands and the railway station. The proposed driveway of the property is also located directly opposite Kelton Lane and is sunken in its design, making it very difficult for the drivers to navigate and see past parked vehicles either side of the driveway, as well as oncoming traffic and turning traffic along with passing pedestrians using the road surface as the Road Act allows. I'm convinced that being a former member of the New South Wales Police Force that the traffic configuration proposed will lead to traffic accidents and possibly a fatality to an unsighted pedestrian. It is my opinion that the traffic conditions have not been properly assessed. Whilst I'm not against progression and development in the area, I'm of the firm belief that it must be measured in line with community expectations for which a democracy is built upon. It is clear, however, that this development is not. Otherwise, there would not have been as many objections by random residents not directly affected by the current proposal. Therefore, I implore the esteemed members of the panel to not only look at the development on a mechanistic and legislative level, but also on a humanistic, moral and ethical level as well. I'm convinced that no member of the panel or even the developer himself would want a building of this stature or size built next to their own properties or the properties of their loved ones that would have a profound effect on their privacy and solar exposure and thus the overall quiet enjoyment of their land. Therefore, it is my firm opinion that the height and the bulk of the proposed development, which is larger than the prior site proposal, grossly exceeds the current community expectations and the noted comments of the prior panel members who unanimously rejected the previous proposal. Therefore, it is my opinion that this current development proposal should not again be considered in its current format.
Ray Markey?
No, he's not here.
Okay, thank you. Alan Bird?
Okay.
Sorry. I need you to come forward. Sorry. We need the microphone.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, how much time do I have? Because I want to respond on behalf of my mother as well. Yeah? Okay. My concern with this is that when I looked at the new plans, not that I can say that I'm understand plans that much, but it appeared that the developer had responded to our concerns by reducing the number of units by one. However, the units are now, I believe, two-bedroom units and three-bedroom units. Okay, so by reducing the number of units but increasing to three-bedroom units, that means that we're going to get actually more people in there than before, realistically speaking. And I think I recall that the car parking provided to the underground proposed parking provided two car spaces for each unit. So it just appears to me that it's a strange way of addressing the issues of the number of people coming and going from the property, which we signalled before, and the traffic in and out across Kelton Lane and so on. That's basically my concern, and I'm sure that the others will address other concerns which I also share. My mother has lived in the place for nearly 60 years, so I guess she would know about what she's talking about when she talks about that there are underground streamlets in the area, which give us runoff and water seeping under the house and all that during the rainy weather. Now, she's obviously concerned about the digging under for car spaces and how that's going to affect the properties around with the water issue. She also mentions that there is a warren of tunnels from the old Excelsior mine under the area, which has caused subsidence, and a local house fell in 1998 into this subsidence, and she doesn't want the risk of a similar thing happening to her, next door to her. She's also mentioned the plan to remove or interfere with trees, and she's observed over the years that there's a variety of birds, finches, king parrots, rosellas, magpies and so on. There are possums of both types, she's even seen bowerbirds, and my brother has recently seen bowerbirds on a couple of occasions. There are blue-tongued lizards, golden-crowned snakes, bandicoots and things that you'll occasionally see. And the the concern there, of course, is that one development might not make the whole difference, but there's a constant attrition of space around our local area where wildlife can exist. She also mentions the concern with the loss of sun in the morning. I'm not sure how the new plans affect that, but she has put that as a concern, and so I'm just repeating it here that we lose the sun in winter at around 3 p.m., so any loss of sunshine before midday is unacceptable. And she does mention that the units are still two-storey units, even though now the garaging is proposed to be underground. So that's it for mine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Braden Ellen. You are?
My name is Mari Komino-Gartrell.
Oh, I don't have you down here at all.
Sorry.
It's all right. I'll let you on.
Thank you.
Mari, what was your
Mari
name?
Mari Komino.
Komino.
C-O-M-I-N-O.
Yep.
- Gartrell. G-A-R-T-R-E-L-L. 32 George Street, Thirroul.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and panel members, thank you for this opportunity to comment on this application. I have two areas of concern: the processes for information provision to residents and heritage conservation. With this DA removed from exhibition on Council's website, we are limited to what is included in the WLPP agenda papers, and these cannot reasonably be expected to provide the full set of DA documents. This makes us reliant on keeping full digital and or paper copies of all material and for protracted assessments with multiple versions of design. This represents a daunting challenge for many residents. A suggested improvement is for the DA documents to remain on exhibition or be readily available online in some way for long-running assessments. In addition, an additional suggestion would be for a simpler process for downloading the DA files in a single bundle rather than have upwards of 20 separate downloads.
Can I suggest you give that to Council? There's nothing the panel can do about that. That's
okay. I'm just making that as a mention.
I know, but we've had a lot of speakers. I'd like you to
stick
to particular
I'll keep it
issues. Thank
Radio.
You.
With regard to what is included in today's agenda papers, there is no summary of changes and some of the diagrams have indistinct markings, making our assessment task more difficult than it should be. Importantly, we ask the panel draw Council's attention to the following: New South Wales Environmental Planning and Assessment Regulation 2000, Clause 55, Part 2. If an amendment or variation results in a change to the proposed development, the application to amend or vary the development application must have annexed to it written particulars sufficient to indicate the nature of the change development. Council is considering approval based on the new design having a more domestic scale street character with finishes and materials more in keeping with modern dwellings in the locality. In response, I would say that there is one new development that this proposal has been modelled on, and that it is not representative of the area. How is this in keeping with the existing character when one house forms the basis for the comparison? In closing, I will say that Council's assessment states that the locality is not a conservation area. This is despite it being a rare example with multiple contiguous original single-storey dwellings that characterised the neighbourhood for the 20th century in one of Thirroul's oldest streets. Council's lack of acknowledgement of the street's built heritage values reflects poorly on the adequacy of their planning and assessment processes, disregards their own stated aspirations for the area, and fails in Council's supposed central role of acting in the best interests of its ratepayer base. Council officers are public servants. effectively, we pay their wages.
I'd rather we stuck to the issues of this application rather than the individuals of planners and what the controls of the council are, because they're council's controls, not the planners' controls, the council's controls.
Thank you. We deserve to have our interests better considered, protected and incorporated into decisions that will have lifelong effects on our quality of life and the character of the rural. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, anyone?
Yeah, I've just got a quick question. So you were notified of the original DA and then you were notified of the amended plans, that's my understanding. Is that correct?
Yes, we were notified, but there was no summary of changes. So that's why this was being brought up. Yes, yes.
So that's what I just want to clarify, that you were given the right time frame in accordance with the notification.
It's okay. Alan Bird now? Sorry. Brandon. Sorry, Brandon. Braddon.
Braddon,
sorry.
That's all right. Thanks, everyone. Madam Chair, I've been furiously trashing what I was going to say to minimise repetition.
Fantastic.
And to try to highlight, I guess, the core issues, the core concerns that I have and that I think everybody's expressed about this. So, in short, I think I've got five things to say. The first is that, as you can tell, we're just as concerned with this DA as we were with the one which the panel rejected in February, and that placing a higher structure much closer to the eastern fence, which is where I am, means that the overshadowing, the privacy concerns, the loss of view and the noise are actually of greater concern than they were in that proposal. The second thing is to remind you about the precedents, if I may, from the rejection of 7 George, which has just been mentioned. And again, the grounds for rejection of this proposal back in February seem to me to apply with equal force to this particular DA. Reject those. I say reject this one. Third, on the other hand, trying to use 36 George as a precedent is disingenuous. As my partner said, my wife said, it's one of 58 street fronting properties like that. It's not a It can't be. It's not typical, and it shouldn't be understood to be a precedent. Fourth, the fact that there are 47 objections, up from 31 last time, is, if I can say so, a signal to everybody, really, the council, the panel, other ratepayers and citizens, and developers too, about the profound desire that we have to take seriously the DCP, and make it a living document, not just words on a page. And fifth, and you'll be pleased to hear last, if I go back to the very first discussions with council in the preliminary meetings with the developer, I think in 2018, the developer at that stage was asked to reduce the size of the building. That didn't happen with DA 1192. That's the one that was rejected in February. And it certainly doesn't happen in this case. So to repeat, I'm asking you to reject this proposal, not only in the light of all the objections that you've heard this evening, but for the sake of consistency in decision-making in the light of the panel's decision in February and the decision about 7 George. Thank you.
I'm going to ask one question, and I'll ask it of you. Given that, just take it from me, that it's under the floor space... that the use is permissible on every block of land in your street, that this particular proposal is under the maximum density that can be allowed and under the height that can be allowed. In terms of the built form, this version versus the previous version, I realise this has an underground basement and the other one didn't, I accept that. But you might give me your thoughts on that. Do you have... if you were forced to have a preference, do you have a preference? The contemporary version versus the pitched roof version, which is what I think the panel was getting at.
Yeah, sure.
Their concerns last time, which was the more contemporary version and the lack of solution in relation to car parking, i.e. the driveway closer to the boundaries and the solution of vehicles going up a carriageway and turning in, up a boundary. This is attempting to solve that by putting a basement. Given that permissible under the height and under the floor space, what do you say?
It's Hobson's.
And it's not a conservation area, however much you might like it to be one.
Yeah. Look, it's Hobson's choice, to be honest with you.
And you may say you don't want to answer the question, but I wanted to pose the question.
Sure. Look, I don't really want to answer the question, but could I say by way of an answer that I can see what the developers, I think I can see what the developers trying to do, which is to find a way to make it work by his criteria to get the maximum value from the investment on the property. And so, as you say, it meets a reading of the technicalities of the terms and the plan and the
I mean, you appreciate that council has recommended that there be further amendments.
Yeah.
And I suppose in that context, what I'm trying to elicit is, given the parameters that I've just outlined, are there specific things that could be looked at to address the proposal before us, over and above what council has suggested?
Sure.
Sure.
I think the key things are the height, because of the overshadowing the POS on our sites and the privacy.
And it's under the height.
And I take your point, but that's the most honest answer that I can give you.
I'm telling you to sit in my seat.
Sure. And the fact that, again, in trying to make it work, okay, so what was one of the problems that was identified last time, and there was a lot of discussion about it, was the driveway, the turning circles that were associated, ingress and egress from the property. So what is a solution to that is to have, as you say, underground parking. Now, I think that, as some of the speakers said, that generates some difficulties or some problems for us in itself, but the way around that from the developer's point of view, or if you like, the gain from that, is that the buildings can be constructed in such a way that they're nearer to the eastern side of the boundary, which from where I'm sitting is to answer your question, that's a net loss for us, because it puts it much closer. It puts it much closer with those raised areas outside units 1 and 3. So
that point about the raised issues, and council has already raised that.
But also more generally, if I may, what was once driveway is now those spaces on the side of the building and the walls of the building being closer to our site.
See, I suspect that you preferred the previous one, and the panel preferred.
Neither of them is within a within a bull's roar of what we would think is acceptable.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. I should have mentioned that earlier. So I'm on the front with my wife Patricia Donaldson, and Annette spoke on behalf of the Stokes, and they're up the back in number 2. Yep, no worries.
Robert Bird, thank you.
Thank you.
Robert.
thanks for letting me have this opportunity to speak. Most people have touched on many of the aspects, and so I won't cover those. My brother did touch on about the wildlife. I actually do specialise in native wildlife. I run a Facebook page, a very successful one on Australian country and wildlife, so I'd like to think I'm not just sitting here blowing out hot air. I do know what I'm talking about. There's bandicoots which live in and around the persimmon tree, which is in their yard. They run back and forth in between the vegetation. They are what was once called the common bandicoot, but they're not common anymore, and they are actually endangered. And as far as I can see, there's nothing that has been altered about chopping down the trees and the vegetation and things like that. There's ringtail possums that live in the persimmon tree. All the other trees have brush-tailed possums and ring-tailed possums. There's golden crown snakes. All of these animals I'm talking about are protected by the New South Wales Parks and Wildlife Act of 1975. Golden crown snakes are protected. Even the humble blue tongue, which they're just in abundance there, they're protected by the Act of 1975. In all of the trees, including the persimmon tree, there is an absolute plethora of native Australian birds. And in the summer, of course, in the persimmon tree, the fruit bats come. And all of this, I can't see anything being done to preserve any of the vegetation. The house itself will be a lot closer to our place at number 30. I think that causes that can cause a potential fire hazard. And as I say, I can't see any changes from last time. So I'm really concerned about that. I know that it might not be a conservation area, but something, you know, you can't just go. If a human grabbed a possum out of a tree and killed it, they'd be in trouble. So the same thing's going to happen here in that there's no regards for the native Australian wildlife. So that's all I've got to say, really.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I think Steve's got a question.
Robert, just a question. Do you know if any of those species, the threatened species, are recorded on the threatened species database?
I know that the bandicoot is, 100%. I'm pretty sure the golden crown snake is too. It's a tiny little snake which is nocturnal. You don't see it much during the day. You can occasionally see them if they're out and about. And in regards to the blue tongue, I'm not 100% sure about that. I couldn't really say. But all these species, you know, even if you want to own a blue tongue, you've got to have a licence. So
what I mean is, yep. on the database at that site, as you know, it's been recorded at that premise.
On which site are you talking about?
On the site, on the top, the database records sightings, you know, at locations.
Yeah, I can't speak with authority about that aspect of it, no. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Now, I have three people here on behalf of the applicant. I have Elaine Treglau, Marco Luziska, and Goran from ATB. Who would like to speak? I'm assuming it will be Elaine. And anyone else for questions? Is that right?
Thank you, panel members. My name's Elaine Treglow and I'm from TCG Planning, and we also have the architect and the traffic engineer with us as well tonight if there's any questions. So look, I think the development speaks for itself in terms of the documentation you probably have before you. I probably would like to respond to some of the issues that were raised to run you through just so that you get a better appreciation of perhaps some of the changes and how we've responded to some of the issues, particularly the character issues. If we start at the front end in terms of the changes to the development, I think there's been a lot of discussion tonight in terms of number of bedrooms and number of units. We have reduced to 4 units. Granted, they are 3-bedroom units. The previous ones were 2-bedroom. The previous units had a living space on the ground floor, so they had a double living space. These ones don't. They just have a single living space. Floor space ratio is under the permissible floor space ratio. And I think one of the benefits of the current design with the basement is that it removes the garages from the footprint of the building. The garages were not encountered within GFA, so you did originally have a much larger footprint. With the garages now tucked under the building, that has allowed for greater separation to the majority of the boundaries at the majority of levels. If we talk through those side boundary setbacks, I think the greatest improvement is to the western side, where previously we had setbacks to the wall of the building of between approximately 4.1 metres at the first floor level and 2.7 at the ground floor level. We've now increased those up to about 5.5 metres at both levels. On the eastern side, the greatest improvement is seen at the first floor level, where we previously had an overhang. And at that first floor level, we have increased by approximately a metre. The ground floor level has come somewhat closer, and I do appreciate the comments that have been provided by the planner in the report regarding the terrace area. And I will say we're very comfortable to continue working with council to address that terrace area to ensure that there's no privacy impacts on the adjacent properties. And I do hear the comment that the terrace area is reliant upon the landscaping on the adjacent property remaining. But certainly one of the resolutions or one of the ways in which that could be resolved is by providing quite a significant non-trafficable landscaped area on that terrace area, particularly in relation to dwellings 1 and 3, and we're more than happy to work to address that. So that's where we sit in terms of perhaps the changes in the footprint. Can I just say that the actual footprint of the building itself is about 8.5 metres wide. We're talking about a 20-metre wide site. So we do provide quite good separation now into the windows. And the separation that we provide to living room spaces and bedroom windows is compliant with council's requirements at all levels. In relation to streetscape issues, there's been much discussion about the development at number 36 George Street. Now, that development comprises three dwellings and is similar in design to this one, with a basement car park. I will say that this is certainly not the first basement car park I have seen. We've had a number of applications approved by council for basement car parks, and I do see a number when I'm driving around, including in the northern suburbs. So I think it's important that the design be taken in the context not just of this street, but in the broader, the rural locality. Now, during the assessment process, the architect has worked very closely with council's planner, and one of the issues that was raised was the skillion roof. I imagine there's many different opinions on roof lines, but the architect has been very comfortable to provide a pitched roof, which it was felt was more in keeping with what's surrounding, but we're certainly open to your suggestions on what might be preferred. But the pitched roof is the latest set of plans that were exhibited. As you may have noted tonight, a re-exhibition of the plans did occur after the changes were made to give the residents opportunity to comment further on those. Now, in terms of materials, there certainly has been discussion in relation to materials. As you can see from the cover sheet on the plans, we have a mix of materials. And that's also evident on one of the later sheets, which I'll draw you to. If you have a look at sheet number 25, you'll see reference to a broad range of materials, which includes lightweight materials at the upper level and brick at the lower level, which we believe is fairly compatible in terms of what's in the northern suburbs. And we are seeing certainly an emerging character in the northern suburbs with more modern and designs coming through, but we think that it reflects quite well what's happening in the street and the broader locality at the moment. Just to mention as well, I think there's been a few comments made that this potentially is quite different to what's happening in the locality. I might just draw your attention to a number of multi-unit developments that have been constructed in George Street, in addition to number 36. And that includes number 12, number 14, number 42, and number 44. I couldn't tell you the age of all of those, but they're certainly in the locality. We do note the panel's comments that multi-unit certainly is permissible. And we note that one of the speakers did express a preference that the existing dwelling be retained. As you would be aware, we're not in a heritage conservation area, and the existing dwelling is not heritage listed. Might also just comment broadly about when we talk about conservation areas, the most recent comments in relation to flora and fauna Council's trigger for requesting a flora fauna assessment is when they have mapped areas of natural resource sensitivity on their mapping, which relates back to the LEP clause. In this particular site, there is no mapped area of natural resource sensitivity on this site. So we would just ask that we be considered in a similar fashion to other developments where there's no mapped areas, conservation areas on the land, which is the case in this one. I might just talk about the number of levels, which was raised as well in terms of this being a three-level development. If I take you to the elevations, let me have a look. I'll just take you to one. Marco, you might take us. Where's that line? The one there. That one? Yep. Okay. Sheet 13 might be handy to have a look at. So the development, one of the intended outcomes of the development was to reduce the visual dominance of the basement level as much as possible. Council's definition of a story under the DCP refers to any level that's more than 1.2 metres out of the ground. The height from the ground level to the top of that basement, where it's below two levels above, is a maximum of 1 metre. Where it's at the front of the site, it's slightly over 1 metre, but at that point there's only one level above, so it is two storeys at any point. And I don't think Council has questioned that within the report. Well, they haven't questioned it within the report. There was also a comment made about the deep soil zone and the fact that someone suggested that we hadn't provided the 15% on site. I would draw your attention to the clause in the DCP, which states that the deep soil zone should be provided at the rear of the site with a minimum depth of 6 metres. Where it's not provided at the rear of the site, they're required to provide 15% of the site area. That's quite clear in the DCP, and it is a very standard way in which Council has calculated deep soil zones on an ongoing basis over many years. I think that's been in the DCP since 2004. In relation to landscaped area, one of the benefits of the basement car park is that it's allowed us to provide additional landscaped areas on the site. Council's DCP requires 30% landscaped area. We have just short of 45%, and that includes any areas that are greater than 1.5 metres in width as per the DCP requirements. In relation to the issue of overshadowing, I'll take you to the overshadowing diagrams, which are on sheet 21 and 22. You will see that shadow to the west is only cast at 9 a.m. Beyond that, from 10 a.m. through to 3 p.m. on June the 21st, which is the worst-case scenario, obviously, there is no shadow cast to the west. To the east, shadow is not affecting that property until 1 p.m., and at 1 p.m. it is just touching the western facade of the dwelling. At 2, it is just partly impacting the front dwelling only. And at 3, it is completely overshadowing the front dwelling and only then just touches the rear dwelling. So that means that both the western dwelling and the eastern rear dwelling receive 5 to 6 hours of sunlight, and the front eastern dwelling receives, say, about 4.5 hours of sunlight, both exceeding the required 3 hours of sunlight on June the 21st. There was a comment made about internal amenity considerations and the kitchens not having natural light. The kitchen, dining, living rooms are combined spaces. The back of the kitchen is approximately 5.5 metres, correct me if I'm wrong, which is a generally accepted reasonable distance to achieve natural sunlight, with 8 metres often being the figure that's utilised for that purpose. So we're quite comfortable with the internal arrangements. We do note in Attachment 3 of the Council Officer's report that there has been a request that an internal adjustment be made to the ground floor spaces to allow more direct access across the front courtyards to the front door. We certainly have no objection to that, and we think it's a reasonable suggestion. We have prepared some sketches, which we won't put before the panel tonight because I know you don't want any extra information, but we'll just say, look, I've had a look at those, and that can be readily done. So that's not a... It's quite an open floor plan that's quite easily adjusted. I think that's probably all of the issues I had. Nope, that's it, I think.
So some questions for you. Uh-huh. Panel, any questions? Larissa?
Doesn't show, the ground floor lines very clearly, like the existing. Can I just ask you, so I just want to be clear about how much that terrace to unit one exceeds the, the ground floor height, how raised it is at the highest point. I know the floor level's at 33.9, mm-hmm. but I know you've put it on sheet 20. You've put a few of them there, but it's just not very clear. I just want to get an understanding because looks like you're coming in level, but the closest RL seems like it's 20-something, which would mean there's quite a big step still at that point. Do you know what I'm saying?
Are you talking in relation to the visitor space or in relation to the building itself?
No, so courtyard one.
Courtyard one.
So when you're entering unit one.
Courtyard one, yep.
Yeah, so the RL of courtyard one, I understand, will be RL 33.9. So when I'm walking up that pathway, what's the closest RL to that, meaning the natural ground level, because you're not really you're not changing the natural ground level, are you?
On the southmost part of that would be 1 metre.
Yes, but what is the closest RL on the... So if you could just this RL on 20, page 20.
No, there's...
You've got an RL here. Can't read it. And I can't read that. I just want to know what that RL is.
This one here.
And my survey's not clear either. I just want to know. It looks to me like it's 20-something, or 9, which would be quite... Yes? Is it on there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we've got that
here. Have we got that? Yeah. So this one here is shown on this plan. Okay, 32 at this point. RL 32. Right. Okay, thank you. That's good. So what's not shown here is that we've got a metre rise to get in there, so there's no stairs, there? You'd need some stairs or something.
Okay, so that... yep. Okay, so how we worked around this was just following the natural ground line. We've actually placed the gates... where we are able to batter it off into that location where the gates are.
So you get a ramp up or something.
Correct. So if you can, if you've gone to sheet 11, you can see the gate relation to natural ground level, and it'll only be a small step up.
But that, I know. But if you're saying the RL at the closest point is 32, that's a metre.
So that will be on the southmost. Southmost part would be 1 metre for unit one, and then it looks maybe 300-400 from where the gate is.
But that's not where your RL is. Your RL of 32 is around here. Like, when you look on your 20, that RL of 32 is nearly at that point of your entry, not down where... So... You see what I'm saying?
It's why the question's asked, because the RLs aren't consistent.
Yeah.
So it's 32 here, but you've got your gate here, so that's not one step.
Yeah.
That's where the issue is, how to get into this one. There's no stairs shown.
So
the resolution of that's not...
Put some stairs, yes.
I
I think that goes to one of the questions that I wanted to ask, which was the levels and the height above the ground of those terraces. I don't know whether in the pack there is a long section. I have a long elevation and I have a cross section, but I don't have a long section or several long sections. So I don't know whether it's possible to lower the built form to avoid any of those terraces being above existing ground level. And that's one of the key questions that I have, that I don't know whether it's possible, but it would go to addressing a lot of the issues that have been raised. And if you don't know the answer, then you can't. Yeah. I think it is something that seriously needs to be considered. Okay. I mean, yeah. I understand you're under the height limit, but this relationship of the ground to your elevated terraces and the separation and relying on other things is all part of the same issue. That I think, unless you can give me some comfort, but I don't think you know, I think we've just identified that we're not quite clear. That is something that needs to be addressed.
I suspect, Mark, quote me if I'm wrong, but I suspect the level was probably chosen at that to address units 2 and 4 being sighted at the ground. Am I correct? So if we did that, we would just have to push 2 and 4 down somewhat below ground, so there would be a bit of retaining, I would imagine, on that, and you'd have to check your grades of your driveway access to
see
if that works.
Things, yes.
Yep.
One of our concerns in our discussions have been related to the height of the building against the boundary, which echoes the concerns of some people here. I didn't pick this problem up because I've only really looked at this today. But if you to get an entry into these places, which are, as you said, about 400, it's not on again. The concern that I have after the discussion we just had is that if that terrace level is about 400 millimetres above natural ground level, how are you going to do that for both those entrances without having to raise the ground line? And that then starts putting another problem, or introducing other problems in terms of the relationship to the adjoining property.
Yep.
And you really need to overcome that problem because the entrances at the moment don't work unless you have an incursion into the basement area, and that means you've got the only way you can do that incursion is if you find additional height inside the basement. You've got to be able to drop it.
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate the problem. Mm-hmm. It's a design problem. So.
Yeah. We could form some stairs up into the actual slab itself, into the suspender slab. That could be a solution.
You could, but it's the height. You've got to modify the underside of your slab to be able to achieve that. And that becomes a problem because you can't have the steps on the outside without a landing.
Correct.
It's not just bad practice to have a gate and then immediately go on to a set of steps or a door and immediately go on to set of steps. You need a landing.
Yeah, we do have the 2740 or 2740 to underside of the slab for the basement. So,
I haven't done the maths, but how high is the basement in that area?
2740
to the underside
of the slab, correct.
And you've got beams in there?
I don't think we've gone that far in the design yet.
But that's always a problem.
Yeah.
Look, the garages can be 2.2 to comply, so you've got half a metre there clearance that we can use. There will be no beams, to answer your question. There will be flat slabs, 200 thick, and therefore you've got half a metre of to play there. But also the whole basement can be dropped down. There will be no impact on the stormwater or geotechnical in regards to dropping the whole basement down another 300-400 mil.
I think that's one of the things that the residents.
So there's two options there to resolve that.
Well, I mean, what you're saying is it can be dropped.
From stormwater point of view and geotechnical, it can be dropped down. Also, the ground level can go lower, so therefore the garage's headroom can go to 2.2 to comply. But 2.4 will be.
If you can do that, that moves towards addressing some of the concerns that were expressed here.
Look, I don't want us to design it, but I just wanted to explore what this meeting. But I wanted to explore what the issues are, and I think that's something that we've identified quite individually. But the height is the issue, and the relationship to the boundary, and the elevated. I think there's a general principle that you don't want elevated courtyards that close to a boundary and relying on landscaping. It's not acceptable. And also, whilst I note the council's engineer has suggested that the turning capacity is acceptable, I would like to see some templates on those because it's particularly tight at the end.
Again, yes, we can provide turning circles for all garages, but I just would try to verify that the car park and the ramp and the whole design fully complies with Chapter 3.
It's a this design is a fairly standard design.
It is.
That small recess that you've got at the end. It'd be nice if it could make that recess a bit bigger to make the turning in and out easier. To me, looks if it's okay.
Yep.
Which is where I'll be.
We'll take that. We'll take that. Comment. Comment. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions from anyone?
Can I raise a matter of process?
No. What we will do now is, if you have no any other points you wish to raise, we will adjourn the meeting.
Can I add a few things here? In regards to stormwater, there will be no pumps required for the basement or the garages to be pumped out. There's natural fall from the garages to the street, so there will be no pumps required to pump the water to the street.
Right, what will happen now is we will adjourn and we will deliberate and make a decision, and that decision will be placed on the council's website. There will be no decision we will make a decision tonight, hopefully, and that will be available on council's website as soon as they put it on the website. You can ask a question quickly. He doesn't need to be an architect, not for this scale of development. It's a generic term. That's not a matter for this particular application. He's not building a high-rise residential flat building where he would need to be an architect. In this particular case, there is no necessity for him to be an architect, whether he is or whether he isn't.
It's just not. You can't call yourself an architect if you're not under the
curve. Can I just comment? I think I referenced architect. I don't think Marco did. And that's a figure of speech, so I correct that.